Good afternoon and welcome back to the Embrace Radio Show. I'm your host, Sophie St. Furman, and I'm here with Maria and Esther from the Office of Intercultural Affairs.
Hello. Hi, Sophie.
How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing all right. It's sunny.
Sunny.
Sort of. It's freezing.
It's cold, yes.
But it is sunny. That does help.
Right.
You know, that makes a big difference. Yesterday was a snow day for my kids.
Not for
us, though. There was no snow, I would like to point out. It was icy in the morning, but it was fine the rest of the day.
I'm always shocked to see what, like, constitutes a snow day here in Kentucky.
Oh, it's very shocking what constitutes a snow day. But actually, my kids, any kid living in Jessamine County, when they have a snow day, it's an NTI day, which stands for non-traditional instruction, which means that I'm basically homeschooling them, but I don't homeschool. So basically, they're doing it themselves. So the work that goes back to the school on behalf of my kids is shady at best.
You know, Maria, I've been in this Dartlet organization that's come to campus having a large-scale assessment of who we are as Asbury University. And one of the individuals on that team is actually from Massachusetts. And she started the session yesterday saying, I told my friends, this is what they close schools for. So it's all perspective, right? Depending on where you're from and what's the experience you have. And often that shapes how we understand the experiences we get to have. And a little bit later in the day, I saw Prof. David Schwartz's kids, you know, walking across campus. And I was like, hey, guys, are you having a great day? And they said, I don't think it was Ben. I forget which of the two were there. But they said, yeah, we don't know why, but we got a snow day.
Yeah.
I said, the sun is shining, so just have fun. And they were like, yes, we will.
Yeah, my boys ate at the cafeteria. They hung out at the gym. Yeah, it's kind of a fun day after they get their NTI work done.
Right.
Which we've already pointed out.
Is
Yeah.
May not be the quality you're hoping for.
May not be. For example, would you like an example of the quality of work that... So they... In elementary school, they have to fulfill a special. So, like, you get assigned a special. Like, it's music or gym or art.
Okay.
So, Oliver pulls out his special, and it's art. And I'm not paying attention. Like, he's, like, flipping through his math real quick. He's got it done. I did make a couple comments. Like, I think that the teacher wants you to explain what you're doing on those lines right there. That's what they're here for. But anyways, he's drawing a snowman. I was like, oh, that must be the assignment, draw a snowman. Like, that's kind of weird, but okay. Well, then I look at the work and it's like, go to this website and follow the directions for drawing Frosty the snowman. So I look
so
at his and I was like, hold up. Like, you have to look it up. You should have heard of him. He's like, oh, why do I have to do this? I hate this. His final artwork was different than his original, but it still was not.
But
it was not exactly
Frosty
what they
the snowman though. That's what went to school.
We did. It went back today.
Okay.
Yeah. So all is well. Well, it's been a busy week on campus. Mm-hmm. We're heading up to midterms. I'm talking to students who are saying, oh yeah, I've got lots of stuff, lots of tests, projects. Our dear Sophie is giving a speech today.
Yes.
We won't make you give it to us now.
No, I'm not very well prepared, I will say that.
We won't tell your professor
no,
either.
No, but you will be prepared by the time
great.
You
yeah.
deliver it.
Yeah, I think part of making a speech is learning how to wing it, you know,
it's
under
so
pressure.
True.
So
it's
I
so
like
true.
To challenge myself.
I'm glad
by
to see you challenging yourself. So.
But, you know, I think it holds the both the verbal and the nonverbal. So you need to leave some space for what you're actually going to sense when you enter.
You don't want
right.
to overprepare.
Space.
No.
Right. You don't want to overprepare.
I don't want to sound calculated.
Right.
Maria.
You want to feel the room.
I want the audience to inspire me.
That's right.
Our guest over here is just like engaged with this dynamic.
You had no
conversation.
Idea it was so fun.
I think he's shaking his head.
It's so interesting. It's not expected.
I have so many things I could talk about because I know what Sophie's giving her speech on. I'm reminded of my speech. But we do have a special guest here today. We're not going to use our entire show to talk about the ridiculous
although
things going on in my head.
Of welcoming the community.
That's right. We're reading the audience.
Yes. And hopefully you are tuned in. And if you haven't had a chance, hopefully. hopefully you will remind your neighbor to tune in and
yes,
listen to the radio show.
Yeah. So I think this is our third week mm-hmm. on the radio show this semester. And I was just thinking today about our show, like, what will I learn today mm-hmm. that I mm-hmm. don't know already about a student's experience, a perspective that I haven't heard yet? What story will come up that will move us? And so I'm really looking forward, as I do every time we interview a student, mm-hmm. to just hearing story and perspective. So I would like to introduce, or Esther, would you like to introduce?
Go for it, Maria. I do want to give a shout out to some people once you introduce our guest today.
All right. Well, today with us, we have Sam Diaz. Welcome. Welcome to Embrace Radio Hour.
Thank you.
We're so glad that you're here, and we're looking forward to hearing from you. But now Esther needs to do her shout outs.
Can I do that, Sam? Do you want to shout out?
I would love it if you did it.
Okay. Please. I just have to take this moment because it comes rarely for me, right, mm-hmm. where you've had students before and then their family member comes and then you get to work with them as well. Mm-hmm. So it is just amazing to be able to give a shout out. I understand that Paula and Gabe are tuned in, and I also know that Mitzi and Edgar are tuned in. So I hope that you know how excited we are to have Sam here with us. And I just want to communicate how much we appreciate you and your family and the students, Mitzi and Edgar, the students that have come from your family mm. to our institution. We are tremendously grateful, and just know that we love you. We appreciate you. I could go on and on, but now I'm just going to give it over to Sam Diaz.
She just left you hanging there.
Tell us who you are.
We're not going to say one more word. You got 50 minutes. I hope you have something prepared.
Sam, tell us about yourself.
Yes.
What year you are in school, your major. For those that are tuned in and don't know much about your story, where you're at right now. How did you get to Asbury University? Just your cultural, mm-hmm. ethnic background, all of those demographic type of aspects of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. So I'm a part of the sophomore class, the faithful class.
All right.
Yes, and I, I'm a comm major, though when I came to Asbury freshman year, I was actually a biology major. But I changed that very quick when I found out how much I do not like chemistry.
That was a quick change for you.
Quickest change ever. So how I got to Asbury, my sister Paula, as Esther was talking about before, was she came to Asbury. And the first time I ever came to Asbury was when she graduated. So when she graduated, I came here, and she had been kind of egging me on about coming to Asbury. But I was 16. I was just kind of like, yeah, no chance I'm coming. You have chapel 3 times a week. I want to live my life, have fun. I don't see myself coming here at all. And she would bother me about it. And, you know, as time passed, and I was like, all right, it was in the back of my mind. Come junior year, I had just turned 17. And my sister gave me a birthday gift. And it was a ticket to come to Asbury for a preview. It was used to be called a fall access event. Mm-hmm. But so I came by myself. I was like, okay, you know, I'll check it out.
That was a sneaky birthday gift.
It really was, because I didn't get an option. But so I was kind of like on edge because I had said I didn't want to come. But so I was like, you know what, I'll just do it. So I get here, and immediately when I am picked up at the airport, it just feels like peace. Mm. I just felt like at peace. And the ambassadors that were there, the admissions office, it, when I arrived, it felt like I was cared about, that they were excited that I was here. And of course, they knew me right away because of Paula. Mm-hmm. Everything was about Paula. Paula was a great student. Paula this, Paula that, Paula over here, Paula over there. And I was like,
Paula, we still talk about you.
Oh my goodness. And not only her, but Gabe as well, mm-hmm. her husband. Mm-hmm. They were so involved here on campus. And so I had a lot to live up to. Mm-hmm. I had a lot to live up to. But I got here, I got my schedule, and it just took off. I went to some classes, I got a tour, and like I got to experience it was chapel. I experienced chapel, and it was crazy to me. Hmm. Because I'm from South Florida. I went to public school. I didn't really, when it comes to religion over there, it's not very spoken of highly. You know, it's more about, they emphasize more on, you know, like worldly stuff and things mm-hmm. like that. And I came to Asbury and I saw how different it was. Mm-hmm. I saw how they actually truly cared about you. I saw how the professors acted with their students, and I felt like I mattered. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting back home and my mom asking me, like, Sam, what did you think? What do you think about Asbury? And I was like, I think this is it. Like, mm-hmm. this is the university that I want to go to. This is what I want to do. This is where I want to be. And Paula and Gabe were completely happy when they found that out. They were like, all right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And we're going to set you up. And then this and that. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, let me get back. Let me take a nap first. But so, yeah, so that's how I got to Asbury. And like I was talking before, I'm Colombian. So I'm Latino. I'm from South Florida. And so it's interesting coming from that background and that life. So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So I actually didn't know you were from South Florida when you said you got here to the airport. I was like, oh, right. I don't remember where you're from.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that's not every student story, but it is a lot of student stories that when they come on campus, they feel a sense of peace and like, yes, this is the place that I want to be. And I always love hearing that from students. And I think that is really what a great place to start your college career, with a sense of knowing this is the environment that I want to be in. And even being won over by chapel when you were not, that was not what you thought you wanted.
That was definitely something that caught me off guard, because even when I got here freshman year, I was kind of like, I enjoyed chapel, but I didn't enjoy it because mm-hmm. it was just kind of like, when I came, I didn't have any classes, mm-hmm. but when I came my freshman year, I had classes, I had stuff to do. So my mind was all over the place. But spring semester of freshman year, that's when I was like, chapel is amazing. Mm-hmm. I remember fall semester, I had used all my skips within the first 2 months.
Oh.
Yeah. And then spring semester, I kind of used all of them and I was like, oh no. But last semester, I only used, I think it was 3 or 4. Hmm. Because chapel has just been amazing to me. Like, it's one thing that, like, I never expected to truly fall in love with, and I have. And I think that's something amazing. And, like, I emphasize that when I'm giving tours here on campus, mm-hmm. is that chapel is one of the things that many people talk about that they miss once they graduate. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think it is about chapel that you have fallen in love with?
I think the different kinds of music, the different kinds of worship. Hmm. Whether it's gospel choir, whether it's the hymns, whether it's, you know, the worship arts bands, mm-hmm. it's just when they play those songs, like, you can feel it. Like, you can feel the sensation of, like, that God is here, that, you know. And I know that everyone has their own way. Everyone has, like, their own issues. But I feel like once I enter chapel, and there's been multiple times where I've had a lot of stuff on my mind and, you know, things going on. But, like, when I go into chapel, it's like my mind clears and I know that everything's going to be fine. Hmm. And then that's something that truly, like, it makes me happy.
I am so grateful to hear that. And grateful to the Spirit of God that moves among us that way, right? There is nothing sacred about Hughes except that God has been there, right? And so that place becomes sacred to us. And that's just a good reminder, reminder. So talk to us a little bit about being in South Florida, being Colombian. What did that look like, and what does that look like for you?
So being in South Florida and being Colombian, thankfully, I wasn't alone in that aspect. South Florida is full of Latinos. Mm-hmm. So whether it be Colombian, Venezuelan, Argentinian, it was kind of back and forth. Mm-hmm. But living in South Florida, there's this little dynamic of, like, I actually, in high school, I spoke more Spanish than I did English.
Really?
Yeah, because there was a lot of international students that would be coming in. And so I was actually the one that would translate for them. And the teachers, because they didn't really know what was happening. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot, and it was interesting, to say the least, because to people that don't speak, you're seen as, you know, Hispanic, mm-hmm. You know, Colombian, like, you speak this language, but to, like, certain other, like, Colombians, I'm seen as American, mm-hmm. just because, you know, I'm English, I speak English, I speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of that dynamic where it's like, okay, am I Colombian? Am I American? What am I? You know, right. And that was something that even through elementary to high school that I dealt with. And it was just something that was kind of conflicting, because even within myself, I was just kind of like, well, man, like, what am I?
Yeah.
Like, who am I? And my mom, I would talk with her about it, and I'd just be like, well, you know, what am I? Like, where am I from? Like, what do I say, like, on a piece of paper? What do I write? Mm. And she would always say that my identity is in Christ. My identity is in Christ.
Smart mom.
Gotta love her. I gotta love her. And so I'd be like, okay, but I don't think I can write that on a paper.
But when they say check the box, yeah, there's no identity in Christ.
They have no writing option to where I can say identity in Christ, and then I get a phone call, sir, that's not no. Like,
we actually want to know something different.
Exactly. But it's interesting because though I was surrounded by Hispanics, you know, people that spoke Spanish, there was still a sense of, like, the atmosphere was tense at my high school, and especially around where I lived, just because there were certain people that spoke Spanish who saw themselves as higher than others, but there was also non-speakers who did not like that we spoke Spanish at the high school. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, things like that. So I didn't really let it affect me that much because I feel like there was a lot of growth that I underwent in high school, a lot of like, understanding and realizing who I was as a person and like as my cultural background and accepting who I was as a Hispanic at a high school like that, which is important to me because I remember at the beginning, well, not in the beginning, I used to arrive early at school. My dad would drop me off at like seven in the morning. Well, he would try to because I never woke up on time. He would have already have the car running and I was still in the shower.
This is a universal child problem.
Sorry, Dad. and so he would drop me off at school and I would walk to the cafeteria because I was like, I might as well have some breakfast since I'm here early. And there's this one time when I was walking through the back and there was these two kids on the bleachers and they saw me walking and they looked at me and they said, your kind isn't welcome here. And immediately I was just kind of like, I was stunned. I was angry, but I just kept walking because I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep going. And like, I was walking to the cafeteria and I was thinking about it. And this was the first time in a while that I'd experienced something like this. And I remember calling my mom and I was like, yeah, like they said this. And like the first thing I wanted to do was I wanted to say something back. I wanted to be like, you know, just angry. But of course my mom talking to me, calm me down, and I just came to realize that it wasn't worth the time because once again she reminded me where my identity was, you know. And as a kid I didn't really appreciate it because I was like, yeah, but now at the age that I'm at now, 20 years old, I look back at it and I'm thankful for what she said, because I saw back and she was right. She was right because I know who I am. I know who I am as a person, and I think that really just helped me a lot.
Yeah, that I think every person has to come to that, right? My identity is in Christ. But the context that you are in, are you American? Are you Colombian? In this high school, it kind of brings that to the surface maybe faster for you and in greater depth for you than people who don't have those differences right in front of them. They're not forced to really wrestle with who they are. I've been taking notes because I have lots of things to, such a rich story, right? Like, and at the core of it is this identity in Christ, which I think is going to be the theme of the conversation. One thing that you said that I think is interesting for us to maybe just pick out for a minute is the diversity within the Hispanic Latino population, right? So we might tend to think, we put people in large groups, right? So, oh, they're all Spanish speaking. They're all the same. But it sounds like you're saying there's a tremendous amount of diversity within that. And even that creates tension.
Yeah. Not even within high school, even as a kid, one of the things was whenever I spoke Spanish, I was asked why I spoke Mexican. And as a kid, I didn't really think much of it. I was like, ha ha ha, that's funny. And the same thing happened in high school. It was the same thing. And it just kind of like people assume that if you speak Spanish that you must be Mexican, which is not the case at all. And it's not more of like they're trying to be rude or it's just more in the sense I felt like as I've come to get older, it's just ignorance in a sense. And it's something that I've been trying to just kind of like push is that though we speak Spanish, we're not Mexican. There's different people from different countries that, yeah, we speak Spanish, but that doesn't mean that we're Mexican.
And so,
that was the thing in high school, that the more you spoke about Spanish or the more that you spoke Spanish, even within the Spanish, like, bubble, there was still that little disruption that that we would like turn against each other just because it was who you were friends with. Mm-hmm. That's what mattered, because you had these students that were coming from different countries. They were trying to find, you know, they were trying to fit in a public school. And so they start forming groups. They start, and you kind of saw that they were getting rid of their original cultures to try to become someone else. Mm-hmm. And as a high school student, my whole thing in high school was, I'm going in, I'm getting my diploma, and I'm not going to forget who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to forget who I am. I'm not going to forget what my parents have taught me, the rules that I've grown up with, the things that I live by. And I did that throughout my entire high school career. Mm-hmm. And it was good, because I'm thankful that I'm extremely thankful for the way my parents brought me up. Mm-hmm. For sure, because I don't think if it hadn't been for the things that they have taught me, the lessons, the arguments, the lectures, especially for my dad, but the lectures, if it wasn't for the lectures, I don't know if I'd be in the same place of where I'm at right now.
Hmm. We're recording this, right? So I feel like this is maybe a gift to your parents. Every parent wants to hear, the lectures were worth it. They matter. Yeah, they made me who I am. Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. I'm curious about, well, we'll get to some of this later, but are both your parents from Colombia?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, Bogota.
And so when did they come to the United States?
So they came to the States around 99.
Okay.
Yeah, so they came to the States, and my goodness, what a story. It's, they came here with not that much money. Mm-hmm. You know, like many like other people's stories. Mm-hmm. They came here with no money and four kids.
Wow.
And my dad would work, and my mom would stay home and taking care of her children. And this is something that I'm so thankful for, and it's something that has really made me grow as a person and just continuously be thankful for my parents. Is my dad would work long shifts. Like, mm-hmm. he would work from the morning till night, sometimes until 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. Other days he'd work from 7 in the morning to 7 o'clock at night just to provide food for our family. Mm-hmm. And my mom would stay home, and she'd wake up at like 4 or 5 in the morning to get her kids ready for school. So my sister Paula, my brother Nico, my sister Caro, me, we lived in a 3-bedroom, one bathroom house. So you have you have 7 people living in a house that only has one bathroom. Hmm. So by the time I woke up to go to school and I was going to take a shower, that water was cold.
Yeah,
it was extremely cold. Hmm. But my parents worked hard, and it's something I'm thankful for, because everything that they worked for, they always had time to mm-hmm. for their kids. They always had time to talk to us about God, to talk to us about growing, to talk to us about respecting each other. Mm-hmm. My dad, since we were kids, has always said that he wanted us kids, his children, to always be close, mm-hmm. to always care about each other, to always be there for each other, regardless of what happens in life. Mm-hmm. That the one thing that's consistent is family, and that he never wanted us to be apart. Mm. And that's seen a lot today. In this day, my family's all over the place, but we still are constantly connected. Mm-hmm. We're still talking every single day. Group chat, we have a group chat together, and it's constantly filled with pictures of my nieces, which is not a bad thing, because I love my nieces. Shout out Everly and Maddie. I love you guys. And so it's just, I'm so thankful for the sacrifices my parents have made, especially coming to the U.S., because had it not been for that, I don't know where I would have been in life. Mm. I don't know where we would have been in life. I know that everything that we have been through from the moment that they came into this country has been just a blessing. Mm-hmm. Even through all the problems we've encountered, you know, the stuff that's happened, it's been a blessing, because it's all led to here. Mm. And so the fact that I'm even here and being able to do this is truly amazing. And I remind my mom and my dad every day that I'm just so thankful for the things that they have done for me and my siblings. Mm. Because it's something that I've always said as a child that I'm going to repay them for. Now, how? I don't know. But when the time comes, I've got them. Like, even if it's buying them a house or getting them something, you know, something nice. But yeah.
Hmm. What a great story. What brought your parents to the United States?
So they were, back when they first got married, they were actually Catholics. Mm-hmm. But then they started going to a church. And their pastors, they started going more and more, and they got more in touch with God, and they started feeling like something was changing. Mm-hmm. And the pastor one day came up to them and said, "You no longer, I feel like," he said, I don't feel like you guys are meant to be here. I feel like God is calling you guys to go and spread his word mm-hmm. and move from place to place. And that has been the case ever since. Mm-hmm. My parents trusted in God, and God hasn't failed us. We went from Georgia to Port St. Lucie, Florida, to Davie, Florida, to Fort Lauderdale, and it's exactly what we've done. They've gone from church to church. And my parents, when they started off, they were children's ministers. Mm-hmm. So they worked in the children's ministry in a bunch of churches. They helped grow it. And we were in Georgia for about 11 years. And my parents, once again, they ran into the pastors from Columbia who were living in Florida. Mm. And they told them that once again, that this is that they were brought together for a reason. And so my parents made the decision to move out of Georgia to Florida. And so we lived in Florida, and we went to a church, and they were in charge of the children's ministry there. And then my dad felt the calling of becoming a pastor. So he became a pastor. And since then, it's been an interesting ride for sure, but it's been a blessed one nonetheless.
Wow. Well, I've been hogging the mic with my questions, so I'm going to let Esther have a turn.
Sam, I'm here still digesting the statement or the comment you made about mom telling you that your identity is in Christ. And as Maria highlighted, that perhaps the theme of our conversation today is going to be this concept of identity in Christ. And I don't know how far away we are from our first break, but I do want to take the moment to ask you if you could help us understand, how do you parse that, right? Like, how do you understand your identity in Christ as a Colombian, as an American? How, because I am not sure that we fully comprehend that, right? We're still trying to understand, how can all of us from so many different cultures, so many different backgrounds, lingual, religious, like how let me just focus on the part of just the cultural and ethnic diversity. How can we still be Colombian and Christian? How can we still be American and Christian? How can we still be Indian and Christian? Like, how can we still be Black and Christian and vice versa? Like, how does that concept translate for you, or how have you seen this formation and this understanding grow for you at this time?
So yeah, identity in Christ. So as a Colombian,
because let me say one thing. I mean, just because your identity is in Christ, you don't stop being a Colombian. You don't mm-hmm. stop being an American. So help us understand that, because I think that's where a lot of us just are so lost.
Because I was lost as well. Trust okay. me, it was a whole confusing thing, because I used to think that it was separate. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to think that I had my identity in Christ. I was Colombian. I was American. And those were three separate things. And I at not one point could I have those three together. Hmm. And that's what I would tell myself, that I couldn't have all those three together. But it wasn't until, I want to say, like a year or two ago, and just talking with my mom, that I just came to realize, like, as time passed, I would talk to my mom about things and be like, it isn't working out. Like, I don't feel good, and you know, and I don't feel like I'm doing good as a human, as a Colombian, as a child of God. I feel like I'm not doing enough. And my mom would tell me, she'd be like, "You're putting your identity in the world. You're letting the world define who you are, when there's only one being, one person that can define who you are, and that's God." And I would think about it, and I'd be like, "Well, no, like no, like it's three separate things. I have my time with God. I have my time when I'm Colombian. I have my time when I'm American. I can't have those three." And then as time passed and I talked more with her, I just came to realize that all those things become one. Mm-hmm. To me, they all became one, because it's not about being Colombian. It's not about being American. I feel like it's just about being a child of God and becoming one with all of that. Mm-hmm. And just molding it all together. And that's exactly what I've done. Now I'm still working on it. It's still a work in progress, but putting it all together has really helped me realize that I was separating it because I was scared mm-hmm. to accept who I was as a person, as a Colombian, as an American, because honestly, I just wanted to fit in. I didn't want to be the odd one out. I didn't want to be, you know, the one kid that showed up to a party and my mom's talking to me in Spanish and the rest of the kids are just looking at me like, oh, wow, you speak Mexican, you know? I would, you know, but since I was a kid, my parents would teach us to speak English. They would teach us to speak Spanish. And we still, to this day, I could talk to my mom in English and she'll respond in Spanish, or I'll talk to my dad in English, he'll respond in Spanish, or English, vice versa. And it's just, in my sense, it's realizing who you are and accepting all of that together. Mm-hmm. And I think that was huge for me, because once I realized that, it was just kind of like, okay, like it felt like a weight was off my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I could move forward and help others who have gone through the same thing and realize that, you know, that it's not separate, like it's all just one.
Sam, that is so important, that distinction. Mm-hmm. And your mention of the fact that it was fear and the fact that we as humans just desire to fit in. Mm-hmm. It's a mentality of just being human natured, that we want to belong. Mm-hmm. And in an attempt to belong, we try to go towards, again, this is an affinity just as human beings, that we are drawn to people just like us, right? There are sociological studies that indicate this. And so you've highlighted two very critical aspects that keep us from understanding that these components of culture, these components of faith, actually there can be a synergy in that. Because I'm kind of reminded to all the, you know, classes I took in my academic work where I was trying to understand that Christ truly transcends culture. And I think listening to your story, I was thinking, what are the features, what are the marks of a Christian? And there is a book, I don't know if it's out there by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, but there is a book that talks about the marks of a Christian. And I wonder if rather than the external artifacts that make us who we are, right? So Maria is a Caucasian, white. You are Colombian American. I am from India. What are the features, right? Like what are those attributes, those traits that really make us Christian and not less of our cultural heritage, mm-hmm. right? Like I'm not any less Indian, or Maria is not any less Caucasian, and you're not any less Colombian American, because Christ transcends all of those aspects. So we don't have enough time to get into it, but I think you're really helping us get to a core issue that is often misunderstood. And we may have to go into a history lesson, right, to really talk about missions and colonial missions and what were the ideologies that were transferred that still permeate our understanding about this, right? So is sharing the gospel with someone making them like us, or is it about making them like God, right? So I'm really in this conversation with you. I am in tune, because I think that is the heart at which we're trying to get at, is are we all then, as a result of understanding each other, becoming more of who God is and mm-hmm. God has made us, because we finally start to understand and recognize the richness of our embodiment.
Yeah.
Embodiments, right? Like we're an embodiment of our culture and mm-hmm. our theology.
Yeah, and that the fullness really, so maybe this is part of what you're saying, or at least where it took my mind, that if fear keeps us from knowing our identity in Christ, when we really say yes to him, that he somehow gathers in all these pieces of our identity and makes them whole. So that really, could we be so bold to say, I don't know if this is theologically correct, but you become really Colombian when you know your identity in Christ more than you would be if you were trying to keep those things separate, right? That I become more Caucasian American or whatever because I know my identity in Christ, that somehow he gathers in all of these pieces of us, makes sense of them, makes them whole, and they really have their fullest expression in him. And it is when I try to hold it away from him that it really cannot be fully expressed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Those are deep thoughts.
Yes. There's, I mean, there's actually a book out there as well by Bishop Will Billimon, who's one of the bishops of the United Methodist Church. And he talks about the fear of the other. And I think that is so core to this issue that we're trying to address. How does faith and culture work hand in hand? And when we don't understand, fear drives us. And when fear drives us, we are motivated by different actions as opposed to love driving us, right? So how do we bring love and fear together that it actually produces something positive and productive? So, yeah.
But isn't that fascinating that we have a hard time with our identity when we are afraid, right? When we don't have our identity in Christ because we're afraid, we aren't really going to be who he made us to be. But that somehow then that also makes us afraid of the other, right? So if I don't really know who I am and I'm not really rooted in Christ and all those pieces of my culture, my ethnicity, all experience aren't being expressed through him, then I am going to be afraid of the other because they're going to threaten me trying to hold all these pieces together. And so I think those things are very connected for us. It is not just my fear of who am I, but if I don't know who I am, then I'm going to be afraid of who someone else is because they might threaten this sort of insecure expression that I have of of my identity. And that security comes in Christ. And when we have that, I know who I am, then I don't have to be afraid of the other. Because I'm rooted in him, and I can begin to see how God can pull the pieces of their identity into his expression as well. We've gone past our break time, but I think we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Colombian culture, how that's influenced you. And
your experiences at Asbury. And what is it that you want our community to know?
So we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Good morning, Asbury University, and welcome back to the Embrace Radio Hour. It is a delight to be with you today with Maria Brown, Samuel Diaz, and the entire Diaz clan that is listening, along with those of you that are here on campus and scattered across. We are glad to bring you stories of our students and how their faith and culture continues each day to shape and inform who they are. Not just to shape and inform, but really in turn to transform our community as well, as individuals who recognize that we're truly all made by God in his image. So, Sam, as we get started for the second segment of this radio show, could you share with us a little bit of what your experience has been like at Asbury University? I know that you've kind of stepped into a legacy kind of narrative, right, with Paula and Gabe having been here and done just such a great job of being contributive members of this, you know, of this university. So you've stepped into that legacy, but how are you building your own legacy and how are you building your own experience and what has that been like for you?
So off the bat, the first day freshman year of moving in, after Dr. Gray had spoken for our class, we walked out of chapel, and Dr. Gray knows my sister because they were close, and so we're walking by, and my sister's with me, and Dr. Gray sees Paula, and she goes, "Oh, Paula, how are you?" And Paula's like, "Oh, we're good. I'm just dropping off my little brother. He's coming. He's coming to Asbury. We just moved him in." And Dr. Gray looks at me, and she goes, "Oh, so Paula's your sister. You have a lot to live up to." And I was like, "Oh my goodness, I haven't even started classes and it's already begun."
So much pressure.
Exactly. Like, "Oh my goodness, Dr. Gray, like, you really did to me. This did this to me." And so coming to Asbury, I was like, "All right, I need to make my own story." So freshman year, I didn't really get involved in that much. I broke my finger the beginning of freshman year, and I kind of had to lay back. I didn't do that much. I just stayed in my room or I was at therapy back and forth. I didn't really get to interact with the community. And then spring semester, I was like, I need to do something. My finger was healed. I was like, all right, I need to get involved. So the first step was getting involved with class cabinet. So I got involved with class cabinet and I started doing that. And it was good. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I got to plan things. And then fall semester of last year, we start planning stuff, and I, from the beginning of coming to Asbury, I was interested in being an ambassador. Mm-hmm. It was just something I had to do because I loved Asbury. I loved everything about it. I constantly talked about it to everyone. And I know that Paula and Gabe had been ambassadors. Mm-hmm. And so I had applied spring semester of freshman year, and I got an interview. And Paula and Gabe were stunned because they didn't even get an interview their freshman year. So I was already 1 point ahead of them on that aspect.
If we're keeping score, exactly. You're ahead.
If we're keeping
now.
Score, I was like, I'm 1 point ahead of you guys. And so I didn't get it, though. So I was like,
and
minus
now you're
one
behind.
Point. I'm back at square one. And so then I came back fall semester last semester, and I was like, all right, I need to do something different. I need to do it. And I remember at the beginning of the semester, I met with you, Maria, and Standia, and you guys had mentioned about how you wanted to start the Emerging Leaders, you know, just a little program and kind of like start a cabinet. And I, at the time, I was just kind of like, me a president? No, I don't know about that. And then I thought about it more, and I was just kind of like, no, I like the sound of that, Mr. President. So I started with that. And then as time passed on, I was getting interested in ambassador again. And I was just kind of like, I need to find out. And sure enough, I talked, I got an interview, and I got it. And I became an ambassador my sophomore year, which was ahead of Paul and Gabe. So
you're a point ahead again.
I was one point ahead.
You're winning.
Exactly. I took the lead. And I would tell Paula about it, and she was like, yeah, well, I did this. And I was like, well, I did this better. And so coming to Asbury and doing all that stuff, it's been interesting. It hasn't been easy. Mm-hmm. I've been through some things here at the university. I've dealt with some things, but I think something that's held me together and rooted me was just the community. Mm-hmm. The band of friends that stuck with me and were like the positivity, you know, mm-hmm. that took my hand and were like, all right, we're not going to leave you alone. We're going to help you. We're going to guide you. We're going to help you grow. Mm-hmm. And that meant everything to me. Oh, my goodness. Like, if I could give shout outs to the people that helped me, it would be endless. But thank you, Carter. Thank you, Sophie. but like, I just the community just changed me. It just changed me. And it just made me so thankful to be here because it made me feel that I was loved, that I was loved. And, you know, and so coming here as Colombian, the first thing I wanted to do was I was looking around campus to see if there were any other Hispanics. And yeah, there were. I met some Argentinians. I met one Venezuelan. But my interest was Colombians. Mm-hmm. Like, am I the only Colombian here on campus? Unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
Did he want it to be the only one?
I mean, I wanted to stand out.
Would that give you an extra point then?
Yes. But no, so I think it was the third day of classes and I saw someone wearing a Colombian jersey. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, that's awesome. Because it was like, out of all the universities in the world, in Wilmore, Kentucky, of all places, mm-hmm. there's another Colombian. Mm-hmm. And then as time passed, I found another Colombian. And then as more time passed, another Colombian. And I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, we're really out here. Like, we're really. And, like, as a Colombian, I feel like you would not see a Colombian here in Wilmore, Kentucky. Because mm-hmm. Colombians, we talk about, you know, we're going to go out. We're going to do this. We're going to go to this big place. We're going to make an impact, you know, like we're gonna stand out. That's us. And coming here and seeing a bunch of other Colombians, it's just like, it was just kind of like a relief because having people that I could talk to that would understand about this, like referencing Colombia or like what's going on over there or about the soccer team. Mm-hmm. My God, the soccer team. I love talking about the Colombian national soccer team. Like if I can talk to someone about it, it makes my world just because they understand what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And people would walk into my room and I have the Colombian flag hanging right there in my room and they'd come in and they'd be like, what is that? Is that Venezuela? Mm-hmm. Is that like, what is that? And I'd be like, no, that's Colombia. And so we get into conversations about it, but I'm thankful to have other Colombians here on campus because it's kind of like an outlet to where, you know, like I can talk to my parents and my family all day, mm-hmm. but like I also have those friends where it's just kind of like, okay, like let's talk about what's going on in Colombia. Like, mm-hmm. let's talk about, you know, what we feel like could change, what we feel like, you know, what kind of impact and kind of like us as students, we're here. We can't really do anything, you know, like we're so far away, but talking to other Colombian students is just kind of like, well, even though we're far away, I feel like we can still make an impact. Mm-hmm. You know, like, though we're here, I feel like we can still, you know, make changes, especially for further Colombian students, because I would love it if even more Colombian students could come to the university or Latino students in general, because just the programs that they have here, the professors that I've interacted with, especially the Spanish ones, like professors such as Dr. Thacker, like they've impacted my life and just made me love Spanish in general, like the language itself even more, mm-hmm. you know, just to realize like the richness it is. And then what stunned me coming to Asbury was realizing how many students that aren't Latino that actually speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. I never in my life would I have thought that I would come to a university where a lot of students know how to speak Spanish. And it's like missionary kids, but also kids who are like, well, I just took an interest in the language. And hearing someone say, I took an interest in your language was just kind of like, it made me happy because it was just kind of like, I love speaking Spanish. Mm-hmm. And to be able to speak it with, you know, someone that doesn't typically, you know, you wouldn't typically think, it's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
Yeah. You know, what you first said, and I'm sure Esther's going to say this too, probably better than me, so maybe I should give you the mic, Esther. But I, when you were talking about the gift of community, that really moved me, because I think we cannot promise here at Asbury that you will not have problems. And we actually can't promise that we will always get it totally right. there will be hard things that come, but it is the community that we strive to create and live into so that each student has that opportunity to grow, to mature, to be loved. That to me is the beauty of the Asbury community.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's something that when I came, like, it's one of the things that drew me, because when I got here, my junior year of high school, and I was getting a tour, people were talking to me as if I was their friend. You know, like they knew my sister, they barely knew me, but it was as if we were old friends. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I love that. I love that sense of community. I love, and not even just with like the students, but the professors. Mm-hmm. Because with the professors, it's just, they truly care about you. And I realized that when I broke my finger and I was getting behind in my classes, my professors were more worried about me and how I was doing than what my grade was. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to succeed. And coming from Florida and, you know, dealing with teachers that, like, honestly, they didn't care. They mm-hmm. just, they were just there because, you know, they had to be. Mm-hmm. But coming here and experiencing that was just, it was amazing. It was different for me. And it was also another reason why I love Asbury, is because it feels like, you know, as a student, I'm valued mm-hmm. in the sense when it comes to that. Mm.
So beautiful. The beauty of our identity in Christ and then that community that comes out of that.
Sam, there is so much to continue talking about, right? And I'm just listening to you and I'm trying to understand, how do we build a community that respects each other in the midst of our differences, right? And cultural and ethnic difference being one that you've just helped us identify, that oftentimes it's fear that keeps us from getting to know each other. So I'm curious, from your perspective of growing up as a Colombian American, being in our Wesleyan Holiness higher ed institutional context, could you share with us what you want us to know about this aspect of faith and race relations? And why do we at Asbury need to talk about it? Why, as Asburians, do we need to engage in growing our understanding of how faith, culture, and ethnicity go hand in hand? Why should it matter to us as Asburians?
So, personally for me, I love sermons or, you know, things that make me uncomfortable. Because they make me think. They make me question what I thought I believed. They make me question who I am as a person. Mm-hmm. But I also feel when you're presented with something that makes you uncomfortable, it also makes you grow as a person. Mm-hmm. I believe that when it comes to, like, faith and race relations, sometimes the issue is people, they don't like the unknown. Mm-hmm. And when something new comes into context or something new is spoken of, they're tense and they're scared of it. So when it comes from a certain angle, things can be misinterpreted. If you don't go into a conversation with wanting to learn and wanting to hear the argument or the story from both sides, then you're not really going to get anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've seen, is that if you don't go into a conversation about any kind of topic, and especially this, which is, I feel, so crucial, If you don't go into there with an open mind, but you go into there with, if he says this or if she says this, then this is what I'm going to say. If you don't go in there with, I want to listen. I'm going to listen. I'm going to hear what they have to say. I'm going to hear their point of view, and I want them to hear mine. And then you just find that common point, then nothing's going to change. And I feel like that's so important. But yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that is so valuable. Do not be afraid of something that is new or something that is different. Because just recently I was engaging with a few students and just trying to understand, you know, when we come in contact with something that's different from ourselves, and in this context we're talking about race, ethnicity, culture, we don't become less of who we are. Mm-hmm. If anything, I'm just curious, if we really face the challenges in this area, do we really become perhaps a more informed and enhanced version of who we are, mm-hmm. right? And so I am thinking of myself, of just recognizing that it makes me a more informed human being. It doesn't take away from who I am, right? Mm-hmm. So you've really helped us, and I really hope that our campus is listening, because I think that is one of the core pieces or postures that we need to embrace, we need to become open to, is being comfortable with the uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to put it, Maria. I don't know, Sam, if you've got, you know, other words, but I think learning to be comfortable with the uncomfortable and trusting God to walk us through that, I think, is the beauty of the Wesleyan understanding, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I go back to all the time. So, mm-hmm. so Sam, you've really helped us, you know, go from a personal experience to a communal experience of how do we do this together? Mm-hmm. Because when you mentioned that you walked through some hard stuff, you did it in the framework of a community. Mm-hmm. And that was the beauty of you being able to stand today, even as you walked through those hard things. So,
yeah, Sam, I'm really grateful for just that perspective that, as we've talked together, have fleshed out of this identity in Christ that comes when we let go of that fear of losing something because we are known in him, and then how that overcomes our fear of the other and allows us to be in community in ways that is healing and makes us whole and helps us to grow and even challenges us. So I echo what Esther has said. I hope that our students are listening, because that is the beauty of this Wesleyan mm-hmm. community. So Sam, we're so grateful that you were on today.
Thank you.
We have just like 1 minute left. Do you have any shout outs you need to give?
Of course. Yes. Yes. Shout out to Mama Alicia and Papa Nelson, my grandparents. Los amo mucho. Los extraño. Shout out to my sister, Caro. I love you. Also, an announcement. I asked if this was okay. I don't know if it is.
Not all views expressed.
Yeah,
our views of the Embrace Radio Hour.
I am running for Vice President of Clubs and Congress Operations for Executive Cabinet this year. And I would love to have y'all's vote. If you guys have any questions, please hit me up, because I would love to talk to you guys. Thank you.
That's great. Yes. Sam, thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yes, we will be. And yeah. The presidential inauguration will be behind us. That's coming up next mm-hmm. week.
Yep.
And also on the heels of that, I think, comes spring break. So
that's
we're
right.
not too far away from spring break. So students, right. hang in there. Sophie, thank you for
thank
bringing
you,
us
Sophie.
On air
Good luck
today.
On your speech.
Yes. Thank you.
And thank you, Sam. We'll see you all in 2 weeks.
Yes. Have a great day.
Yeah.